Cranes are beautiful and fascinating birds, aren't they? And how the International Crane Foundation came to be located here in Wisconsin is pretty fascinating and amazing as well. Hi, Larry Mueller here. We love to check in with our friends at the International Crane Foundation a few times a year. This is a great time to do it. Cranes are migrating, and the annual Midwest crane count is right around the corner. Ann Lacey is the crane research coordinator at the foundation. And Ann, great to have you back.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you.
And Kate Fitzwilliams is the marketing and public relations specialist at the International Crane Foundation. Kate, thanks for spending time with us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, we're really happy to have you with us. And I know listeners, we have lots of listeners who have great questions. You, as you listen, you may love cranes. Do you live in an area where they visit? Have you seen any this year? Do you have a picture or two that you've taken of cranes that you can post up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show? Love to have you do that as well. You can call in with your questions and stories and comments at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And again, go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. And already, callers online. Tammy, we'll get to you in just a minute from Marshall. But first I want to ask Ann sort of a background basic question. Sandhills are the pretty common place now, aren't they?
They are indeed. Wisconsin is lucky to have the most abundant crane species in the world, the sandhill crane. Out of all 15 species, sandhills are the most abundant, and the most rare species also occurs in Wisconsin now, the whooping crane.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very interesting mix.
And that certainly hasn't been the case.
Correct. Yep. Back in the 30s, I think Aldo Leopold estimated there are about 25 breeding pairs in Wisconsin. And you'd be hard-pressed to find a county that
didn't
has,
have 25.
Or twice that, yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's absolutely wonderful.
It's very much a success story, yeah.
Yeah, and the whoopers, Kate?
We are so excited to have whooping cranes. There are over 100 that will be in Wisconsin, and it's all through the reintroduction efforts of a vast partnership, the Whooping Crane Eastern Partnership. And I think a lot of people have already started posting on our Facebook page at the International Crane Foundation, citing some whooping cranes.
Oh, wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Already this year.
Well, there might be a couple back in Wisconsin, but even up and down the flyway, people are just so jazzed to see them. It's amazing. the comments are like, you know, this is a once in a lifetime. And I say, well, that was a first of a lifetime, hopefully. Hopefully you'll be able to see many more.
And they're purists. You know, they really talk about how different they look from sandhill cranes. They're bright, bright white with the black wingtips.
Yeah.
So they're very conscientious about saying when they saw a whooping crane. They're not willy-nilly reports.
Exactly. No, they're describing so you know that they know.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, Tammy and Marshall has been waiting a bit already, so let's go there. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, Larry. Hello, guests. Judith already prepared me that I'm a little crazy thinking that there shouldn't be cranes here already, but my husband claims there are out in the Deansville wildlife area where we walk our dogs, and I said, like, no, those have to be turkey tracks. He's like, no, they're cranes. So are they here too early, and what are they eating, and how do they stay warm? I just want to know.
No, you're not crazy. They are back, and they might be crazy for being back.
Yeah.
But they are driven. There, the hormones are flowing, and they just know that it's time to breed. And with the number of sandhill cranes that we have in Wisconsin, it's all about real estate. You can't breed unless you have that territory that you defend. And so that's why they're back very early. And everybody's remembering about a year ago, now we were suffering in 70-degree heat, which seems like a dream now. But
yeah.
So it ordinarily there's open water and plenty of open fields for them to forage in. So they're probably in the creeks looking for, you know, various bugs and little fishes that they can get, or digging through the cornfields if they can get through the snow. But they have those little down coats underneath their gray feathers so they can keep warm. Or they might not be as warm as we would prefer, but they are warm enough to be okay. And if they have to go without food for a couple of days, they might have to go without food, but they have fat stores that they've gathered up over the winter. So that helps too.
They're hardy birds.
And just briefly, because my husband was worried, like, if we're interfering by walking them the dogs, are we disturbing the birds?
Well, they probably see dogs as one of the, to them, normal things in the landscape that they should be aware of. I mean, certainly there's coyotes all the time that they see. So I know Deansville very well, and that's a big crane area. So I do not doubt at all that those are sandhill cranes.
Okay.
There you go, Tammy. Thank you. And speaking of, well, the tracks, she mentioned arguing whether or not they might be turkey tracks or hoop or sandhill tracks. What would be the difference in size? You think about...
Boy, yeah, I was thinking about that because in my backyard, I'm so very lucky to have a pair of sandhill cranes, and I also have turkeys. So I have been doing that very thing, comparing the size, and I'm not quite sure. The toe, it's smaller than an average palm size, but, you know, crane feet are pretty big, and turkey are a bit smaller.
I think, I was trying to remember, I know what size turkey tracks are, but the sandhills, I assume they had to be
three
bigger.
3 inches, yeah. They could think about maybe a toe's length would be 3 inches for a crane.
All right. Well, Steve in Algonquin, Illinois, up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I'm in the Illinois Fox River Valley, just south of Algonquin, and I remember years ago being outside in the spring and hearing what I didn't know were cranes flying overhead. This year, I've already heard and seen cranes starting about 3 weeks ago. Several skeins flew over a couple of days ago when we had partly cloudy skies. The sound is unmistakable. I did see some over the Fox River here, and last week I did see some birds in some flooded farm fields out west of town, out near the Gilberts area. To me, it's a wonderful sign of spring. You know, I look at the weather forecasts and I see they're talking about 63 degrees in a couple of weeks, but it sure isn't here yet, and it would be welcome.
Oh, I crave it. Happy vernal equinox, everyone.
Yeah.
You'd never know it. But yeah, that is one of the signs of spring that we hear. You know, people just wait for that sound way up in the air, that broop, broop, way up there.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful. But it's not uncommon now in Illinois for them to be breeding in forest and lake counties. And we are cooperating with a graduate student that is looking into that, you know, how they're doing in that kind of semi-suburban type area.
Cool.
And how those sandhills are faring in that area.
Well, they're welcome here. There's certainly a lot of land, you know, west of where I am. There's encroachment of suburbs, but the land is there, the water's there, the habitat seems to be there, and if they want to take up residence, they're more than welcome.
Well, we encourage you to get involved in the crane count, and that you can get to know exactly where those birds are in your area and make them counted.
Let's talk about that, Kate. Can you describe the crane count for us?
Absolutely. It's a program that has been going on for decades with the International Crane Foundation as a way for people to get out, enjoy wetlands, and start to understand what's in their backyard, which for Wisconsin are a lot of sandhill cranes. And it's now expanded to about 6 different states, which does include Illinois. And people can find out how to get involved in our annual Midwest Crane Count by going on our website and finding cranecount.org. And it has all of the information that you need to find your county coordinator. And let me just stop and say thank you so much to everybody who has counted cranes and coordinated. We've made a great partnership with eBird.org. And when you go and count cranes, it's just a great time to get outside and enjoy all of the nature in your own backyard. But you can find your coordinator at our website, cranecount.org, and find out who you should contact to find a site to start counting. And the count this year is April 13th. And you get up bright and early.
Yep.
5:30 in the morning until 7:30 is the official count time.
So 2 hours in the morning.
2 hours in the morning, April 13th.
Hey, get up early, 2 hours of counting, go have breakfast someplace at a nice local restaurant.
Yep,
you got
often
it.
The counters will get together and exchange stories about the cranes that they heard or saw. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Oh, it's wonderful. Thanks. Thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. And, let's go to Elizabeth in Poinette. I think has a great story for us. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, and I just love cranes. And, yes, they've been back about a month. I've been seeing them up here in Columbia County for a long time. I'm surprised. But my story is, I'll never forget it. It was a couple years ago, traveling on a country road outside of Point Apps, and a coyote just shot in front of the car. And shortly thereafter, a crane was following him in flight, chasing him away from a group of cranes and other migratory birds that were in a little pothole that was about this time of year when it was warmer. So I just thought that was a remarkable sight.
That is exciting.
That's a great story to tell. And they're not afraid. I mean, they'll take on.
I'm wondering if that was a nesting bird, and especially when they have eggs or chicks around, they do not mess around. I have seen one time when I was doing observations, I was sitting in a blind and started to hear that crane do an alarm call, and I'm sure that crane that you saw was doing the same thing. He was yelling, and I saw a coyote go veer off of a straight line and curve around this crane and give him a wide berth and then get right back on that line once he had passed and keep going. He did not want anything to do with that crane. They have lots of sharp, pokey bits, and they do not want to get in a tussle with a crane.
Well, it was a thrilling experience, and I'll never forget it.
Oh, that was a great. Thanks, Elizabeth. Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you've got a crane story or a question about cranes or maybe about the crane count. Love to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234. Let's turn to Rick in Stoughton next. Rick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to relate a crane. This is a crane fox story. We were kayaking on the Yahara River near Stoughton, and had binoculars with us and saw a pair of sandhill cranes pretty close to the bank. And then all of a sudden we noticed there was a fox, and a red fox was, it looked like darting in and out of their legs, and they were kind of almost hopping around like a person would if there were a mouse on the floor. And I was surprised that, and I'm just thinking that maybe it was because of the closeness of the quarters there, that they didn't fly away, and it didn't really even seem like they were trying to attack the fox. It just seemed like they were at a loss of what to do. And I'm just curious as to that behavior.
I have never seen anything like that, but I can almost picture it. Kind of that the mouse is just jumping around like it's a mouse on the floor is perfect. It's really hard to say. Sandhill cranes do not have a flightless molt. So they molt out all their feathers, but never all of them, all of their flight feathers at once. So they would have been able to fly. So they may have had a chick. And I'm not sure what time of the year this was. Was it May or June?
Yeah, it was spring. So it seemed to me that we did see a smaller crane with them.
Yeah, I bet that was it. And so they didn't want to leave that chick, but it was kind of like, go away, go away. I told you to go away. Why are you going away?
it was a very unique sighting.
Oh, very good.
That's a good lesson to everyone. That's why you should just stop and look around every now and again because you see things like that.
Rick, thank you.
You bet.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. Talking about the International Crane Foundation and, of course, about cranes with our two guests, Kate Fitz-Williams, a marketing PR specialist with the International Crane Foundation, and the crane research coordinator at the foundation, Ann Lacey. Again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A little bit later on in the program, maybe 20 minutes or so, we'll be talking about Wisconsin's endangered and threatened species list with a couple of folks from the Department of Natural Resources. Looking forward to that, but also looking forward to the rest of our conversation this morning with Kate Fitz-Williams and Ann Lacey about the International Crane Foundation, the crane count that's coming up, and about the habits of cranes. And certainly looking forward to hearing what you have to say. You may have a question about cranes or a story to tell us about an encounter you might have had, and we certainly are looking forward to that as well at 1-800-642-1234. And let's go to Rosalie in West Salem next. Rosalie, hi. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you. I was out early one morning at Veterans Park in West Salem walking down the walkway, and a mother and father, the parents of these two young birds, were probably about 30 yards ahead of us. And I had my dog on the leash, and you could tell by the way the parents were looking at us that if we approached them, there was going to be a problem. So we stayed still and just watched them go back and forth, and they did what they wanted to for about 20 minutes. It took us to pass them and feel confident that there wasn't going to be an encounter.
That was perfect behavior, Rosalie. Yeah. Thank you. It's always good when you're in a natural area, especially during the months of May and June, when the small chicks are out there, because a dog, you know, they don't know. And he could easily pick that bird up and bring it on back to you and say, hey, I bought you a present, you know, and they don't know. So that was great.
And the parents would give him a present with a beak in the back.
Sure would. And watch out even more so for the feet. But there's also a lesson there for people. And I hear all the time about people, and people are so attached to these birds because they are so, what's the word? They are so... dot, dot, dot.
Majestic.
Yeah, there's one. And you know, they wait for them every year to come back to their wetland, you know, in their backyard. And cranes will recognize people. But, you know, I always caution people to not get too close, because if they have a chick, they are not afraid to defend against those people. And our aviculturists at the International Crane Foundation know this all too well. Birds that are accustomed to people, they see them as just any other threat that's out there, and if they come into their territory, they will defend it. And people count too. So that was perfect. You got to see a wonderful family group and see how they are in their natural environment and how they act, and all is well with both parties.
Yeah. Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Cranes were the theme for Judith's wedding, actually, our producer, because cranes represent, as she says, fidelity, longevity, and luck.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, isn't
Indeed.
It?
Indeed, yes.
It is. The crane and the fox story was a great story, too, and it reminded me of so many stories and fables where cranes have a part, and an important part. And we have a wonderful book called The Quality of Cranes, written by Betsy Diedrichsen, who runs our library and many other things at the Crane Foundation. And The Quality of Cranes can be found on our bookstore on our website, savingcranes.org, and it just shares all of the wonderful fables and symbolism that cranes encompass.
Wonderful. And actually, we have a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as well, so you can just click right. If you're on that now, you can just click on it and go right to the International Crane Foundation. Molly and Lafarge, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello. Great show. I just have such a special spot in my heart for cranes. They're such amazing and, like you said, majestic animals. Just wanted to share, we used to live in Kearney, Nebraska, and since it's such a major staging area for the massive crane migration that goes on, just wanted to share how if you can get there anytime, it's just incredible. The cranes are there for about 2 to 3 weeks, I believe, and it's not quite this early. It's a little bit later. It's towards the end of March, and they just come, just massive flocks of sandhill cranes, and it's just really, really incredible. So I just wanted to throw that out there to your listeners, and also wanted to say that I've seen 2 whooping cranes in my life, so I think that they're out there, and it's really cool to see. I saw one 2 years ago, and then one last year, right around this time.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and also that I've heard sandhill cranes near our house in Lafarge, so I know that they're around. I haven't seen them yet, but I have heard that little trill that just is so exciting and such a sign of spring.
Oh, it is. You know, do you have to say, and this going to go back to the crane count for a minute, do you have to see the cranes, or can you go by the sound? Because that sound is so...
Definitely, you can go by the sound. You can definitely check that out off in your observation sheet.
Okay.
The sound is unmistakable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, if you hear a unison call, it's got to be 2 birds.
It has to be 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Molly, thanks a lot. And I think, Anna, Kate, do you guys know about Kearney?
As a matter of fact, it is. I recommend it to people, and I am leaving for Kearney tomorrow to go out and see the cranes, and I cannot wait. I cannot wait.
Yeah, cool.
And I recommend it to anyone who, you know, has nothing else to do. It's, you know, go for spring break instead of going to Florida. Go to central Nebraska, of all things. Mm-hmm. About 500,000 birds, literally half a million birds, people, go through that about an 80-mile stretch of the Platte River. And that includes whooping cranes. And whooping cranes do tend to migrate a little bit later. A colleague was just down in Texas, and he said that most of the birds are still down there, which is a good thing, probably. But the sandhill cranes started showing up in the end of February, and about the peak is right now. So there's, you know, 100,000 to 300,000 birds in this area. It is stunning. And that's not counting all of the snow geese and the Canada geese and the waterfowl and the spring passer and migrants going through. It's wonderful.
A wildlife spectacle. I was able to go 2 years ago, and the sound, you're talking about hearing the sounds of the sandhill cranes, the sound is just unbelievable when they're taking off. It sounds almost like a
soccer stadium.
Yeah, or a soccer stadium. Exactly.
Well, now, Anne, are you going to be taking a little video while you're there and getting some of the sound and the picture?
You should.
I can do that.
Because you can post that up on your Facebook page or up on your site.
Great idea, Larry.
Stay tuned.
Says the marketing person.
Yeah. Stay tuned next week, and I'll give you a little taste of what we heard and saw.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thanks, Molly.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it very much. I had an email from Janet in Oak Creek, so who saw four cranes flying over the road in fields of Kenosha County yesterday. They were having a pretty hard time flying into the heavy headwind, lots of wobbling, even though they have, with their large wings, this was around Highway 50, about 5 miles west of the lake. Should I report this to the crane count? What do you think, Kate?
That is a great question. The thing about the crane count is it is only that day that you're observing, that day being Saturday, April 13th. And it's only during the hours of the count, which is 5:30 a.m. to 7:30 a.m. So for our official annual Midwest crane count, you wouldn't report those four cranes today. Bringing in eBird.org, you can... eBird.org is amazing because you can absolutely, Janet, get on eBird.org and sign up and report that you saw four sandhill cranes. It's a basically an electronic database for bird watchers. And if you have anything to add, Anne, about eBird, please do. But specifically, the count and those observations are just those 2 hours on April 13th.
And the reason, give us the reasoning why on that. Why do we just have it for those 2 hours, Kate?
Well, it helps index to the population, and it keeps it very consistent when people are seeing those birds and where they are seeing them and where they're not seeing them. So it just keeps the data very consistent.
And I would think that if it goes all day, then you have people counting the same cranes over and over again if it's flying around.
Right, because they fly around.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So
and hearing the same cranes.
That was kind of why I thought probably 2 hours. Mm-hmm. That minimizes that, I would think, to a great degree.
And that giving it's not a true count, because in those 2 hours, there's birds that you miss or they're out doing something else where you can't hear or see them, but it gives a great index to the population. So that's exactly what it is. It really gives us nice trends to the population numbers.
Well, I tell you what, Judith, in her usually efficient self, has gotten us a clip of a whooping crane. So here's what a whooping crane sounds like. Let's see if I can get it up here. This is great.
That is an alarm call. Yep.
Ah.
Very distinctly different from a sandhill. And it carries for miles, so you'd be able to hear that.
Yeah. There we have it. Very cool. And that was an alarm call. Okay.
Correct. Yep.
And that was the whooping crane.
Yes.
Eunice in Dodgeville. Hi there.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to share with you, I guess, right after Christmas, I was in Florida, and we went to St. Mark's National Wildlife Refuge, and we saw one whooping crane. They told us that we couldn't plan on seeing one, but we did just see one take off. So,
oh, that is excellent. Yes, St. Mark's National Wildlife Refuge. It's right on the Gulf Coast, south of Tallahassee. And this year, that was the destination of the ultralight-led migration. And this is the second year for that that destination. So some of the previous year's birds have returned to that area, and that might be one that you saw. But it's a little bit remote from where the public viewing areas are. So they were right to tell you that it was difficult to see that. And you were very, very lucky to see it. That's a wonderful story. You know, and it's soon to be more cranes that will be breeding at the International Crane Foundation, and we actually have a way that you can see the birds being raised for this year's release right from the start, right from the egg.
Oh, right. Wonderful. Go talk about that a little bit, Kate.
Well, we have a crane chick cam. So you've seen a lot of zoos that have webcams on their residents. And the International Crane Foundation opens to the public April 15th. And that's where people can come and see all 15 species of cranes. And they live there year round. And it's where you come and you enjoy a guided tour and you learn about our work worldwide. But specific to the whooping crane, we have a great program where we're breeding whooping cranes for release into the wild. And our aviculture staff wears costumes to disguise their human form and raises these birds to be birds. And so our crane chick cam, which can be found on cranechickcam.org, shows the little chicks growing and being cared for by their caretakers. And these chicks grow an inch a day. So each time you go and check back to cranechickcam.org, you're seeing new chicks that have just hatched, or you're seeing these birds that have grown in the week.
So if you wait a week, you come back and, like, they're 7 inches taller.
Yeah, they're practically driving. They're just, you know, in their teenage years, they're gawky. You know. So, but it's just been a really fun project, and we're doing it for the second year this year.
Oh, that's great. So actually, you can find that through your International Crane Foundation site. Okay.
Crane Chick Cam.
And Eunice, thanks again. I appreciate it. Ann in Random Lake, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Hi. We live in the country, and we have a group of, every year we see about 3 to 5 sandhill cranes in the area on a regular basis. I once came up over a hill walking the dog, and there were 5, possibly 6, this was years ago, on the ground. So that was interesting, but they've sort of gotten used to us walking the dogs, and they don't seem to fly away anymore. They just walk away. We're still at some distance. But a few years ago, my husband saw, it looked like it was a group of the cranes in the far off in the field, and he was still far away, but he was able to see that there was one on the ground that seemed to be ill or wounded or something, and there were at least 2 others that stayed there with it. It was over a couple of days. They just stayed with it. And we assumed that one eventually died, but they didn't leave. So it was sort of interesting to see that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that was a family group. And birds that are non-breeding, non-territorial, unpaired birds, they're just kind of, you know, biding their time until they do reach breeding age. I don't think that they would have that much connection to another bird. They would be like, oh, see you tomorrow, brother, good luck. But a family group would stay together like that, especially if it was a young of the year. They would still have that connection to that bird and would stay there to protect it. So that's a very interesting observation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Ann.
Thank you.
Kind of sad in a way, but on the other hand, it's really interesting to know that they'll stay with a family member and try and guard that family member who was injured. Stephen Fitchburg. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. I saw a couple of sandhills on the Odana Golf Course a few years ago, later in the summer.
Yep.
Raising heck with the fairway. I gave them a wide berth. They really didn't seem to be bothered by us at all, but I was very cautious of them.
Steve, I know that pair. I've gotten calls about them. There's a, one of the roads that's very close to the Odana Golf Course. They were wandering down the road one day. So you did the right thing, is just to be wary of where they are. And, of course, they know where you are. And it's kind of like the same side of a magnet. You know, you can't put them together. They'll, you'll keep that distance. But something that the golf course can do, because it's certainly not anything that's good for the cranes or the people that are coming there to the golf course, there are scare methods that can make it unpleasant enough for the birds to say, you know what, it's just not worth it. I'm going to set up shop someplace else. This is a territorial pair, which makes that very difficult. So it's not like you can just box them up and move them someplace else, because they migrate, and they migrate back home, and that homing mechanism will take them right back. So you can maybe put them in a spot on the, you know, haze them essentially to a spot on the golf course where they're happy and the golfers can maintain their golfing.
Mm-hmm.
So I have dealt with people at airports and golf courses about that issue. So it's just a matter of... That's a lot of my job, is trying to outsmart cranes and to try to make them not quite so much a nuisance sometimes.
How long will the cranes live? You have a breeding pair. How long will they be together?
If the cranes live through their first year, they can live 20 to 30 years. That's not uncommon.
That first year is the tough one, though.
Yep. If they make it through their first migration, then there's really not much that can hurt them, but there's always disease, there's always collision type issues, that kind of thing. But otherwise, and once they find a pair, those pair bonds are usually permanent, but mm-hmm. we have documented divorce in cranes. Oh, the shame. but they still do better than people. Their divorce rate that we've calculated in our study area is about 5-ish%. So every now and again it happens.
Tim in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to tell you guys, I was driving back from the state of Iowa, and I was just spent a night in Kearney Grand Island, Nebraska, watching the cranes. It was just
great.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's the way to sell it. You need to see that. I've had truckers call me from the road and say, I'm driving on I-80. What is going on? So it is wonderful that you were able to experience that.
Lucky you, Tim.
Oh, and they are in, and it is... I can't express what a pleasure it is to see those birds. And anybody that has never watched them, you know, when they come in to land, it's totally different than any other bird, because I think it's because they're so long and skinny and lightweight in comparison to their wingspan. So they're just like a jet gliding in, and they just land so gracefully, besides all the other goofy jumping they do.
Yep, that's that jumping, the dancing that cranes are famous for, is a pair building exercise. It strengthens their pair bond and helps bring them into breeding condition. But that every single time, I'm a grown person, and every single time I see them do that, it's called parachuting, and they just kind of float down. I say, "Wee!" It just looks so fun and so wonderful.
Yeah, it was just so spectacular. You know, it's almost hard for me to express it, but you know, I guess that. At night, they form large groups like any other waterfowl and then fly. And then in the morning, they seem to be all spread out and doing their little mating dances, et cetera. Is that true?
Generally, yeah. Yep. They're still, the territoriality is coming out, even though they're not near their breeding grounds. But they do kind of get nervous being around so many other of themselves. So their pairs will probably try to find a spot that they can go and eat and defend their little eating area, perhaps. But with that many birds, it's hard to get away from everybody else. So they just eat and do their thing.
I have a couple technical questions for you. I was watching one group by myself and for quite some time, and there was one crane that was in there that was a little smaller, and it was more of a cinnamon brown color. Is that just a juvenile or a strange form of the sandhill crane?
At this time of year, the juveniles that hatched last year will not have their cinnamon-colored feathers anymore. So that was probably an adult lesser sandhill crane. So the lessers are... We have graders here in Wisconsin, uh-huh. and there's also some in that go through the central flyway. But most of them are lesser, and so they're a measure smaller, kind of like downy versus hairy woodpecker, kind of that kind of ratio difference.
Yeah, our greater and lesser Canadian geese in the old days.
Sure, yep. And they paint their feathers with mud. And that the mud oxidizes, it rusts, and it turns rusty red. And often the cranes here in Wisconsin will have that.
Mm-hmm.
Very same thing.
How about when they ruffle their feathers? They would ruffle their feathers, and they, their body size would swell up about 2-3 times the size of what it was normally.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. That's a comfort behavior. It could be a threat to other birds when they ruffle that. Sometimes they'll do it immediately upon landing after flying a distance. And so it has many different meanings, but that fluffing up and making yourself bigger.
And what are they grazing for when they're out there in the fields? Because I noticed they seem to actually prefer more bear-type fields in a lot of cases.
Yeah, it's usually corn. Waste corn in all those fields, that's the high-energy food that they need to build up the body fat, both for the rest of their migration and for breeding, to keep them going through the breeding season. They don't eat soybeans. They seem to, that protein cannot be utilized by them in the form that it is in the soybeans. But, you know, they also find worms and bugs and all sorts of little random things, too, in the wet meadows around the Platte River.
Tim, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call very much. I want to get one last email from Dave in the movie Dances with Wolves. Kevin Costner is looking across the tall grasses waving in the prairie wind, and in the distance is a V of birds. Soon the birds come closer and the sound of geese fills the theater. As the birds come closer, 99% of the viewers accept what they see. However, to a lover of birds and sandhills, one sees that there are sandhills. They are sandhills and not Canada geese. Definitely allowed.
I did not pay attention to that. It's been so long since I've seen the movie, but I think I'm going to go
back.
See
that again. Absolutely.
Yeah. It sounds like the, you know, the ubiquitous red-tailed hawk that's in every single movie scene with any kind of bird. It sounds like the exact same thing.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, Kate and Ann. Thank you so much for being with us. And I want to what's the day for the crane count now again?
April 13th.
And you need to go to your website.
That's right. Or easiest is cranecount.org.
Okay, and there you're going to find out who you're, you know, in your area.
Exactly, your coordinator, who you want to contact, and we have a list of coordinators. They've been kind enough to give us contact information, and you find out where you can count in your county.
Thank you both so much. It's been a lot of fun. We'll do it again.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure being here.
Really great to have a couple of upbeat people who know a whole lot about cranes, Kate Fitzwilliams and Ann Lacey. Ann's the research coordinator of the foundation. Kate's the marketing PR specialist there at the International Crane Foundation. Never even really got into the 40-year history, which is something we'll have to do the next time they're on.
Go to that website.
Yeah, it's website and Facebook.
You'll find out all about it. Well, I tell you what, that was a lot of fun. And it's always kind of inspiring for me to talk about cranes, I think. Isn't it for you? They're a real success story of species coming back from the brink. And coming up, we're going to dig even deeper into endangered species. Folks from the Bureau of Endangered Resources at the Department of Natural Resources are here to tell us how species are added to or removed from that list. I hope you'll stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.